This is The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly. And I know we've asked it before and the jury is still out, but is there a case for not starting Ronaldo in this Manchester Portugal team? Fernando Santos reads Jonathan Wilson's back catalogue, brings in Gonçalo Ramos, who promptly scores a brilliant hat-trick. Portugal were astoundingly good. João Felix and Bernardo and Fernandes orchestrating things, all while the second best player his generation wore a bib. The camera panned to him more often than Gianni Infantino, which is saying something, but fair to say Portugal will take some beating. And it'll be Morocco who try a huge moment in their history, a first World Cup quarter-final, and a victory over neighbours but not always friends Spain. 1,000 practice penalties doesn't seem the best use of their time right now. A glorious defensive performance by Amrabat and friends, and they won't fear Portugal. I wrote that before the Portugal result. Also today, some more dancing, some music reviews, and some coat hangers. All that plus your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Jonathan Faduba, welcome.
Hello, Max.
Hello, John Bruin.
Hello, Max.
Hello, Barry Glendenning.
Howdy.
Well, let's start then with Portugal 6, Switzerland 1. We had a lot of questions and comments on one particular part of that game. Sean says, is it childish for me to want Portugal to win the World Cup, but only if he who shall not be named doesn't play? Bill says, a chance of a World Cup final between Portugal and Argentina and Ronaldo's on the bench while Messi scores. Ninth Citizen says, any of you worried when the pod is better when you're not on? Alan, with Ronaldo out of contract, would it be worth a club signing him just so you can drop him instantly to make your team better? And Capanosti says, Portugal look like a child who's been allowed to walk to school on their own for the first time. Ronaldo is dropped. His replacement scores a brilliant hat-trick. Objectively, Barry, that is hilarious.
I suppose it is. I'm surprised, actually. You seem to be reveling in his misfortune more than I am, and you're a much nicer person than I am. So I'm a bit surprised by that.
Well, I did say before we came on air, by the end, I almost felt sorry for him. But, you know, these are the questions that we've got. I'm just the messenger here.
Yeah, it was a massive call for Fernando Santos, and unquestionably the right call, but... And when you say it's a massive call, you think, well, they were always going to be better without him, because if it's obvious to me that they're going to be better without, you would assume it would be obvious to Fernando Santos and even most Portugal fans, apart from the Ronaldo fanboys. And I think that sizable army might be dwindling by the day. I mean, I must confess, I don't think I'd even heard of Gonçalo Ramos before this tournament, but what an introduction. That was a splendid hat-trick. 3 brilliant goals. He could have had another couple. His first goal was just, wow, sensational. Like on ITV commentary, Ali McCoist was just blown away by how good it was. And Ali knows a thing or two about scoring goals.
Yeah, Jonathan, as Barry says, the goals were brilliant, weren't they? He was absolutely sensational. As a manager, you can't hope for that decision. Just in his wildest dreams couldn't have gone as well as that.
Yeah, I'm quite excited to discuss him, because many times on this show, Max, you've said to me, you must have known him since he was 12 or stuff like that. And this is probably the first time I can actually say that it's a player that I kind of have followed for quite a while.
Oh, brilliant.
So hopefully I can fill in a little bit, and without obviously trying to brag, but I remember watching him in the youth league in 2019-20 season.
Sounds like bragging to me there, Jonathan.
Yeah. Geeky, humble brag. No, but he is a really, really good player. And it's nice to sort of see a player, you know, who's come through the ranks, make his name on the international stage. And that's kind of what the World Cup's all about, isn't it? Players that few people have heard of kind of bursting onto the scene. In fairness to him, he does have it in him, Ramos. He's a really good striker for Benfica. And he kind of showcased what he can do. He's really good at first touch finishes, running front post or back post. And he's actually really good at those sort of goals, and he can score off both feet. So it's a rare example of a player kind of showing everything he can do in like one match in like 45 minutes or so and announcing himself on the world stage. Playing the Champions League, obviously, for Benfica as well this season. But I don't think anyone would have expected him to do what he's done this evening. I mean, a frightening performance. And I guess from here now, everyone will know about him, and Benfica will probably be licking their lips at, you know, what's to come.
Yeah, and Michael says, how much will Wolves have to pay for him in January? The camera actually panned away, John, from what we really wanted to see, which was Ronaldo hugging or shaking the hand of Ramos at the end of the game. What was that interaction going to be?
What I was thinking was, has there been a generation of Portuguese forwards that we've missed because of Ronaldo? And then finally we get one of them, Gonçalo Ramos. Because before Ronaldo's coming and actually having to play centre-forward, I always just think of Portugal as like one of those teams that are really good, but they don't have a striker. Now, that's with the greatest respect to Nuno Gomes and Pauleta and all these types. And then I'm just thinking, if they'd have had Gonçalo Ramos, they'd have been really good and they wouldn't have needed Ronaldo. Funny old game. One thing to note, big grin on Bruno Fernandes' face after that first goal. And then, of course, the camera shot we all wanted to see, which was Ronaldo sat on the bench. And then, of course, he will have been aware, of course, that the camera was on him. So his second goal goes in. Big grin. Hey, you know, I'm really part of this. I'm part of the gang. And then a colleague of mine, a friend of mine, was at the game. And, of course, in the second half, the crowd, who slightly sounded a little like they might be tourists, were cheering for someone to come onto the field, Ronaldo. On location reports tell me none of those fans were actual Portugal fans.
Wow.
So maybe the worms turned there.
Actually, Matty says, this is like Soccer Aid when they bring a celeb on up front.
Yes.
And all the real footballers either ignore him or give them a pass because they feel sorry for them.
They want Will Ferrell to come on or something like that. And then there was that bit with Ronaldo, and this reminded me a bit of Soccer Aid as well, where he's flagged offside. He knows he's offside. I mean, come on, Ronaldo, by instinct, knows that he's offside. Of course he does. And he still goes and finishes it and then does that sort of, was it offside? Did I feel sorry for him? Like you, Max? Am I a nicer person than Barry? Nah.
Jonathan, you wanted to speak in defence of Ronaldo. I don't know if that's taking it too far.
I don't think I'm going to say defend him, but I maybe want to offer a counterpoint to be considered. Although the way Barry's okay. Looking at me, I'm already...
I'm genuinely interested to hear what you're going to say.
But I just wanted to sort of maybe balance it out a little bit and just say, like, if you sort of strip it down, I do think there is a bit of a human story going on there. If you just ignore who the person is, if you've been good at something for sort of 20 years and you're sort of no longer good at it and you're aging, I do feel there is a little
bit. Are you talking to Barry now, or are you talking about Ronaldo?
What the hell have I been good at? Fuck off.
just in general, like, I think there is a bit of a human story that is being overlooked because of who it is, in the sense that Ronaldo's been at the top of his game for 20 years and been so dedicated to his craft. If you just ignore the name and just think of someone who's really good at something and has been really dedicated to it for so long, getting to the point where they realise they're no longer actually that good anymore and they can't really do it to the level they used to do. I do think that his reactions and the way he behaves is kind of like a failing to deal with the fact that he's no longer that good. He doesn't know how to process his own aging, which I do feel is an interesting little side point to the fact that it is quite funny, and not many people who realise they're no longer good at what they love the most get offered £200 million a season to continue doing it. So I do understand that point of view, and I'm not suggesting for 1 minute that anyone shouldn't laugh about it. But I have found that an interesting sort of side point to the fact that he's no longer good anymore, but he doesn't know really how to process it. This is how I feel about it.
I think Jonathan makes a very eloquent point there, because, you know, as long as Ronaldo would like to sustain it, and he's had several operatives in the press talking about how he'd like to play till he's over 40, it's not going to happen. And he is going through something that so many sports people go through, which is the dying of the light. But he's going about it in the limelight he's always lived in. I suppose one thing you might say is that if you're nice to everybody on the way up, then on the way down, people might be nice to you. I'm not sure that's always been the case. And the way, you know, the Ronaldo Inc. has operated over the years hasn't always been to everybody's tastes. There is a sympathy there. And of course, you know, Ronaldo's had his own personal difficulties. And yeah, as I said before, the camera is always on him. And how do you react like a situation like that? How would we react in that situation?
Yeah, like his very sort of open lack of humility is why I think it's funny. But at the same time, and I suppose what you have to think is, because he was being the best or the second best or whatever in the world ever. So there are lots of footballers who found retirement difficult or found losing their pace difficult, whatever. But I suppose you can only look at, what, Pelé and Maradona, pretty much, to go, how did they cope? And clearly, you know, Maradona found life very difficult, right? But there are very few people that you can compare at that level of absolute brilliance to lose it. And especially while Messi is still doing it, you know, yeah, I think it is a really
I'm not
point.
Sure Pelé has found it that easy. You know, obviously, no. His life has become a sales pitch, and it's demeaned what he once was. And how can Ronaldo step away gracefully? I don't think it's that easy to do so. I don't think anyone, as Jonathan says, he's been offered £200 million to play in Saudi Arabia, we believe. Is that stepping away gracefully? I'm not sure everyone would think that. There is always an interest in what people do after they were famous and after they were, a superstar like a Beatle or something like that. It will be a very interesting story to see what becomes of Ronaldo.
But you know, beyond that, Barry, and I know Switzerland were not very good, and I really thought this was going to be a tight game. I thought this could have gone either way. I really thought the Swiss would give them a game. Like, I haven't seen millions of João Felix games, but I've seen enough, and I have never seen him play that well. I thought he was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, agreed. Switzerland were everything Morocco were not in their game against Spain. You know, players getting dragged out of position, just really poor at the back, and well, everywhere. I think Brelembolo was okay, and that was about it. But we said it before about, you know, Barcelona back in the day. It for them must have been like we'd just been attacked by a swarm of bees, because Portugal's front five were relentless. They were just made any time they got forward, whoever was on the ball had loads of runners either side of them, and Switzerland had no answers for them. I mean, I didn't notice any sort of tactical changes after half time, apart from Fabian Schär was taken off. He had a shocker, and he was replaced. It was like for like replacement. And, you know, there may well have been something I missed, but it was a pretty awful day at the office for Switzerland. I didn't expect them to win, but I didn't expect them to lose that heavily.
No. I guess the question, Jonathan, is how, like, without wanting to use a cliche, is now the time we take Portugal seriously? I really just didn't think they had any chance of going all the way in this tournament. I really thought they were just sort of in the group stages. They didn't really impress me that much. And I've watched that performance, and there are always two teams on the pitch. Switzerland were bad, but it feels like quite a statement victory, that. And just the way the fluidity they had was just really joyous.
Yeah, I think, funnily enough, the big question was, will the manager have the kind of the temerity to take Ronaldo out of the team, because they do have forwards, even, you know, Rafael, who came on, I think he was on for what, 5 minutes and scored a really nice sixth goal. He's, yeah, just sort of, I think Ali McCoy's watching it, thought it was a deflection, but it's just, he just sold the keeper somehow and, you know, stuck it in the other corner, basically, and really deft finish. He's a quality forward as well. Obviously Ramos with the hat trick. They are really stacked, and I feel like maybe we're taking them for granted a little. Maybe they've kind of gone under the radar a little bit in terms of how stacked they are. I mean, I think Bruno Fernandes, don't think he's necessarily had the best sort of maybe 12 months for Manchester United, but I think he's been one of the players of the tournament at this World Cup. I think he's really, in pretty much every game, he's stood out, either created or scored something. And I thought he was really good again today. Like you said, João Felix finally sort of coming to the fore. He looked phenomenal. Looked like he's playing with a bit of freedom, which he maybe doesn't get at Atletico Madrid. And when you look at, you know, we talk a lot about Ronaldo, but the managers, Santos, also left out João Cancelo, who was, obviously we all know, at Manchester City, left him out, and they could still bring in Guerrero, Dalot, left out Ruben Neves, and could bring on Otavio as well in midfield. They're stacked in every area, really, for options. So they are going to take some beating. it's like you, I hadn't even, we hadn't even considered them really to win this World Cup, have we? But maybe it's time to take them serious now. I think Portugal, Morocco will be a really interesting clash of styles. And I wonder, like, I can't predict that game to be like, it's, you know, now with the 6-1, you'd think they'd go on and beat Morocco easily. But I really think that's going to be a challenge that Portugal haven't really faced yet. And that's going to be a really interesting game.
Sean says, with all these youngsters who weren't born before the 2002 World Cup, making us feel ridiculously old, how nice is it that Pepe keeps going, making us all feel like we still have a chance, John?
Yeah, and actually, I'm sorry to mention him again, but Ronaldo joined in the celebrations of Pepe's goal, didn't he? And that's because they've been close allies over the last, well, I think since it's Euro 2008. And Pepe's one of those people who, how can I put this, is a bit of a shit on the pitch, right? Yeah, and always has been, yeah. But actually is known within the football community as one of the nicest lads that you could ever meet. And everyone likes him. And I was delighted for him. Was he 39?
Yeah.
And that makes him, by the calculations of everybody, he is the second oldest player to score behind the blessed Roger Miller. And that's quite exciting.
And it was some leap as well, wasn't it? It was like a proper brilliant header.
Yeah, this is not some creaking central defender. He's still got plenty of the facets that that made him such a top player, actually, you know, back in his golden days at Real Madrid. Jonathan says that they are stacked. Now, is a team with a 39-year-old defender stacked enough to go far in the World Cup? Should they face, let's say, an Argentina or an England or whatever? I'm not sure about that. That would be to me, that might be the weakness in the Portuguese team. And
I think their keeper looks slightly suspect.
Yes.
If anyone else thinks that.
That's a good point, though, Max. Who's been a good keeper in this tournament?
Alisson.
Yes.
Pickford.
Yes, Pickford has been good.
Yeah.
Bono.
Bono played well today, didn't he?
But it was one game he didn't play in, of course. But
yeah, Luis, I don't trust.
No.
And I can't remember.
Emi Martinez, it has a sort of rick in him, I would always say. He's a good goalkeeper. It's not been a great goalkeeping tournament, has it? That would be my, not like your 86s with your Jean-Marie Pfaffs and all that type of thing. It's not quite been there. And obviously, there have been several bad goalkeepers in. I would put Spain's goalkeeper, Unai Simón, at the top of that list.
Well, we'll get to that, won't we? On the subject of Ronaldo being dropped, and some people, it's quite interesting, Barry, to watch people on social media saying, why is everyone talking about him? Because he's not playing. We should focus on Ramos, and hopefully we've done enough of Ramos. But my favourite, and I sent you this clip, I don't know if any of you watched it, was on Fox Sports in the United States. And Chris O'Dowd, who some people think Barry looks like because they sound similar, and then they see a picture of Barry and they're, I was going to say disappointed, Barry. That would be the wrong word to say. But anyway.
It would be the wrong word, but it would also be the accurate word, I think.
But anyway, Chris O'Dowd tweeted this. That's how I saw it. The host, who is someone called Rob, crosses to somebody called Tom Rinaldi, who says, Rob, there's only one thing worse than being talked about. That's not being talked about. The iconic Irish writer Oscar Wilde said that. Don't know if he was a soccer fan, but he definitely would have been a fan of Cristiano Ronaldo. really enjoyed that. Do you, John, do we think that Oscar Wilde would have been a Ronaldo fan?
Well, Oscar Wilde is late 19th century, so it's sort of the Wilsonian era, isn't it? You know, so probably a big fan of like the Honourable A.F. Kinnaird, you know, that guy that played in 5 FA Cup finals. Maybe saw Steve Bloomer in Bloom.
I suppose in those days, there wasn't really a high press, wasn't there? So in many ways, you know, Ronaldo really fitted well into a side where Oscar Wilde would have frequented the terraces.
Yeah, I think Oscar Wilde was more a W.G. Grace man, really, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, quite possibly. I don't know. Anyway, I enjoyed that tremendously. Damien says, with the similarities between these red and green kits, anyone else feel like they've been watching Morocco play for 5 hours?
Right.
A slight tactical switch after 120 minutes from Morocco going, we've defended enough, lads. Let's go all out.
They certainly perked up.
They really did, didn't they? Okay, well, that'll do for part one. We will discuss Morocco's brilliant victory in part two. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. So Morocco and Spain drew 0-0. Morocco won 3-0 on penalties. I mean, before we get into how bad the Spain penalties were, despite their 1,000 penalty practice, Barry, you said Morocco would win, but it is the first time they've got to the World Cup quarterfinal. Is a sensational moment for them, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm just curious to know, did we leave that bit in the pod? Or was that also removed? Like Chesney Gate. It was a brilliant performance by Morocco. I thought an outstanding defensive performance. We know they can defend. They've conceded one own goal, I think, in their last 8 games. That's it. Good on the counter. They probably should have won it in extra time. That Wally Chedira guy who kept getting through on goal and then forgetting to shoot, which is quite an important aspect of his job, which he seemed to overlook. But I have to say, I'm delighted for Morocco. And I said it before, they are going to take some beating. Like, they really are an outstanding football team, I think. Their defence is just immense. And they could win the World Cup.
Do you go with that, Jonathan? Could Morocco win the World Cup?
Why not? I think what we've seen tonight, I mean, who would have backed them to beat Spain? This game was obviously laced in history. You can go back 500 years to sort of look at the context in this match. And it partly explains the scenes, obviously, from the Morocco fans at the end of the game. One of the best World Cup games I think I've seen. Maybe it's like recency bias because I've just seen it minutes ago and I'm slightly stunned. But yeah, like the scenes at the end just summed it up. I think Barry's right. Like they're slightly underrated in terms of they have a good defence. I mean, Romain Saïss looked like he was playing with a torn hamstring at the end of the match. Like he still came back on the pitch and was hobbling around. Naïef Aguerd is a decent player at West Ham. They've got an excellent left back. I thought Mazraoui was one of the best players in the match. He tired and obviously went off at the end of the game. But, you know, he's at Bayern Munich. Hakimi is one of the world's best right backs at PSG. I think he's an incredible player. And the stones on that lad to step up,
wow,
and hit a Panenka.
It's amazing.
I'm still getting over it now. I can't believe what I've just witnessed. And then pull out a penguin dance as well, you know. But yeah, I do think they are a well-rounded team. I think they just lack a top forward maybe. And Nesri, I think if he'd stayed on, I think he would have taken one of the other chances. But maybe that's the one thing that's they're missing to sort of go all the way.
Clearly, we're going to have to check with a set of pundits as to whether you're allowed to do a penguin dance after scoring a Panenka to take your country to their first ever World Cup quarterfinal. And actually, you know, people have talked about that camera angle for penalties. Is it as good or isn't it as the traditional one, John? But actually for the Panenka, it really showed just quite how beautiful a scored Panenka looks.
It captured its very essence. If you were going to Panenka a goalkeeper at this World Cup, which goalkeeper would you choose to do it to? I think I know the answer to this one, and it might be Unai Simon. A friend of mine messaged me the other day, he doesn't really pay much attention to football these days, and said, what happened to David De Gea? Simon has been ropey all tournament. He wasn't that bad during this game. But Morocco, I think they fancied penalties. Spain clearly did not. This thing, it's a repeated policy these days, isn't it? To bring a player on to take a penalty. Now, actually, Sarabia did something that a lot of these players don't do, and this didn't happen in Euro 2020 final with Marcus Rashford, is that he actually got a touch. In fact, he could have scored. He hit the post in the very last minute, but then he misses his penalty. And this keeps happening, where they bring on a player to take a penalty, and he misses. And actually, the saddest sight of all is Busquets, one of the best players of the last 10, 15 years. That penalty was a sad sight, really, wasn't it? Stepping up, that no-run-up thing. Now, yeah, just hit it, mate. Just Julian Dixit. Just Kevin Pressman it. Just get it launched, obviously. Just hit it. Just hit it, mate. Come on. I mean, and I feel desperately sorry because, I mean, when we were previewing this tournament, Sid talked about how Luis Enrique wanted Busquets to to, you know, to play the next World Cup, which, you know, obviously isn't going to happen. But it's just a sad way to sign off. That surely is it for him. I didn't actually think he was particularly good in the game. Morocco, they didn't control midfield, but they didn't let Spain have the ball in the way that they'd like to. And at the end of it, setting aside it, Morocco were brilliant. A bit of Greece 2004 energy from them. Let's say that, shall
Absolutely,
we?
Absolutely, yeah. Interestingly, sorry, just on what John was saying, Morocco also brought a fellow on in 120 minutes, presumably to take a penalty, and he also missed.
Well, yes, he did, yeah. So
I did think if Spain and Japan went to penalties, it would just go on forever. We'd just kind of side-footing it to the keeper repeatedly. Stephen said, on that sort of Greece 2004 thing, Stephen said, Morocco, a young Croatia, question mark. I'm interested, you know, Jonathan, you said you thought it was a great game. I thought it was not a great game. I mean, I thought Morocco defended incredibly stoutly. It depends, I guess, what you want from football. But I did sit there watching a lot of it saying, not much is happening here. And maybe I'm just not as much of a purist as you, Jonathan.
In terms of the football spectacle itself, if you're purely judging the match on, is this a good match of football, then you'd totally agree with you, Max. You know, it wasn't, it's not like a classic spectacle, was it? I think it's just the tension around the game and the like I said, the historic context of the match in terms of, well, I won't get into a history lesson, but you can obviously look back at the history of Morocco, Spain, and the history of sort of Christianity and Islam in Spain, basically, is a fascinating story. And that's what the World Cup is, really, at the end of the day, isn't it? Like, there's a game of football on the pitch. You might not see an incredible technical spectacle. Like you said, Max, you know, Spain, they pass it around. They weren't really that effective. I think on the last show, when I covered Spain, sort of we talked about it, didn't we? How they're not incredible to watch, really, in terms of what they do. They keep the ball. I think by the start of extra time, they'd had 800 passes and I think 0.09 XG or something like that, which summed it up, really. Not doing too much with it. Morocco were very content, weren't they, to keep the ball out of their net and try and hit them on the counter-attack. But I just think that also the fact that the Morocco fans were you know, took up three-quarters of the stadium, they were so on it. And I think that's what made it, for me personally anyway, really an exciting match, because you felt like Morocco could win this game. And obviously when they did at the end, and like I say, I'm still getting over Hakimi's Panenka, to be honest. I'm not going to forget that for a long time. But just to finish it off like that, just to me, it made it like an incredible match. But I do understand why people would say it was pretty dull in terms of the actual pure spectacle.
John?
I was just going to say that from a footballing context and football history, this is only the fourth time they'd ever met. And considering that they are very near neighbours, that's very interesting, isn't it? And that probably speaks to some of the geopolitical stuff that Jonathan was mentioning there. They met, I believe, in a double header for the 1962 World Cup qualifier, and then they met actually in Russia 2018. And then this game, yeah. Well, Morocco is the most famous victory in their history, no matter if it was Spain or not.
Yeah.
You know, those of us who remember 86, they were a good team back then. It's been a long road since. Well done, Morocco. Brilliant. Yeah. Brilliant.
Jim says, how far into the match before you realised that the Amrabat playing for Morocco wasn't the one who played for Watford? First couple of minutes into extra time for me. Yeah, Sofyan Amrabat was superb, actually, Barry, in that sort of holding midfield role. Because not only like physically is he good, but his touch on the ball is excellent. And he's been great all tournament.
Yeah, he was everywhere. I was curious, actually. His brother isn't in the squad. I don't know if he's injured or just wasn't selected, but I presumed it was the Watford Amrabat as well until someone said his first name and I had to go and check. But he was the standout player in the match, just snapping into tackles. He looked to be several Amrabats on the pitch, but he was the only one. We've established that. And yeah, Hakimi was great as well, I thought. And just the whole back four were outstanding. It was an incredible display. And I'm with you, Max. I thought it wasn't much of a game until extra time. And then it really, really got going.
Yeah. Extra time look was quite fun, wasn't it? I was absolutely convinced that that Moroccan defender had put the ball in his own net. Yeah. That's actually a really good clearance. But I was just like, oh, mate, you can't just then. And then, you know, just after that, Sarabia hits the post. But actually, it's a brilliant effort from Sarabia. That sort of side foot volley is technically so hard. And as you mentioned, Chidera sort of going through twice and then just barely pulling the trigger. Peter says on Spain, aren't Spain just the Chesney Hawks of football? They have one hit tune. They've been touring for about 12 years. It's very charming and easy on the eye, but isn't it all just getting a little bit predictable? I mean, they were, John, toothless in this game, weren't they?
Chesney Hawks had two hits. Can I say this?
Well, you can. You're our music expert.
Well, yeah, they had the follow-up single was called "I'm a Man and Not a Boy."
From the film
Buddy Song. Now, do you remember in the days when you used to have smoking on planes? Yeah.
No, I don't actually, but...
Yeah, me and my sister on a flight to New York, which sounds very posh, I know, found that they were showing Buddy's Song at the back of the plane, not in the smoking section in which we were sat in. So we sat for 2 hours amongst a group of people chain-smoking through Buddy's Song to see Chesney Hawke's film performance. So I thought I'd add my own touch to the Chesney World Cup saga.
Does Spain have their man, not a boy? Is that putting Morata on? What is it, Nico Williams? Is it Ansu Fati? Like, they've got those players. They could have a second hit, but it just didn't work.
Yeah, yeah. Gavi, is he a boy but not a man? That's the issue, isn't it, really? and Pedri. I mean, the thing is with Spain, setting aside Busquets and Jordi Alba and Azpilicueta, I think was injured for this game, there's a lot of promise there. But as ever, and even actually as ever during their golden era, they need to find a striker. Now, they had David Villa back in 2010 and 2008, but they never really replaced him. And he's still their all-time top scorer. Spain with a striker would be really dangerous, but I suppose we could actually say that about Morocco in this game as well. They are really frustrating to watch Spain. I've done the minute-by-minute on a couple of their games during this World Cup, and you almost pull yourself into the same pattern of Spain are dominating possession but not really creating much. And that, I made this comparison before, they remind me of the Spain that happened before the Aragonés and the Del Bosque teams that were so dominant, where they turn up, play great football, not put away the chances or create enough chances and go out of a tournament. And that's the Spain we're seeing now. So possibly in the future, but if Luis Enrique stays around, he's got a lot of talent to work with.
Are you saying, John, that it's like Barry Davis, that famous commentary moment with Italy when they lost against South Africa? Spain are out because they just will not learn.
Exactly.
But that's the thing. They have got so much talent. And before this tournament, Jonathan, I think people were starting to say, you know, that midfield of Pedri and Gavi looks so, that, you know, they're so wispy and nice to watch, aren't they? And they have got good, exciting players, you know. And I just wonder if Enrique could have utilised them better, could have not got it launched, right? I understand Spain will never just get it launched, but just launch it a little bit, or just, you know, bring in Nico Williams a bit earlier, or I don't know.
Yeah, I tend to agree, really. They were so good against Costa Rica that they almost deceived everybody, really, in how good they were. That 7-0 game, like, the way they keep the ball was so impressive. But when you sort of watch the Germany game and then obviously the final group game against Japan, to be honest, I fancied Morocco to win this game somehow, to be honest, like before the match, because I felt that they would do sort of a similar job that Japan did on the, you know, at some point in the game. I thought they would be able to be more defensively solid and catch them at some point. And that's the thing with Spain. They don't capitalise on that dominance, as John mentioned. You know, but I think we also have to give massive credit to the Morocco manager, by the way, because he joined in August, Walid Regragui, and they haven't conceded a goal yet. No one scored against him, basically, since he joined. There was an own goal against Canada. But apart from that, he hasn't conceded a goal in 8 matches in charge. He won the African Champions League with Wydad Casablanca. And, like, I know we're sort of laughing about can they win the World Cup, and I don't think it will happen, but I don't think they'll fear the quarterfinals either. And, you know, this is the first time Morocco have ever reached the quarterfinals of a World Cup. The first African manager to get to a quarterfinals of a World Cup as well. So it's a pretty momentous occasion for the continent. And the way he motivates his players, I think they can really feel confident maybe of even getting to the next round. But in terms of Spain, just to sort of sum it all up, I think Enrique's a brilliant manager, but I did feel like a lot of their players that they're relying on are it's maybe one or two tournaments too early for them. You know, if you look at when they brought on Ansu Fati, for example, Gavi, Pedri, that you rarely see international tournaments won by such a young squad, I think, or such a young spine. And so I just feel they didn't have maybe that experience and maturity to sort of get through this really tough game.
You can't win anything with kids, can you? I did like the Morocco manager when I think Spain missed their second penalty. Was that Soler? And he just sort of did a massive cheer, like really good. And then he just stopped over and went, everybody calm down. It's like, that's all right. you haven't really proved that. Seb Hutchinson's having a great tournament, isn't he? Friend of the pod.
Brilliant panelist.
A really brilliant tournament and he's been great. But I really enjoyed it on 93 minutes and 32 seconds when he said, you feel a goal now, we'll win it. It's not really sticking your neck out, so, is it? I enjoyed that bit. Sofia Boufal's having he can only do about an hour, but he's so much fun. And there was one moment where he beat his man by just jumping back and forth about four times and then going. And I was like, oh, there's just something about Boufal. I mean, if Morocco win the World Cup, I'll mainly be delighted for Sofia Boufal. I may release another single. Advances, clearly Spain don't like it up them. But question, which team does? I thought it was quite a good question, Barry. That, you know, it's a bit like when you say, oh, you know, no one likes to play against this team, or no one likes it. There's no team that likes it up them, do they? You can't just go, oh, maybe Stoke, sort of 2010s.
I suppose looking at the teams left in the tournament, Croatia probably don't mind it up them.
Yeah, probably.
They're up for a fight, a scrap. And
could it be a Croatia? It could be a Croatia Morocco final. Oh, God, that'd be one for the purists, wouldn't it?
That's the final I want, actually, having said that. Yeah, no, I think Morocco don't seem to mind it up them at all, do they?
No,
I
mean, that's, you know, true.
I mean, obviously, we've had this thing of the African teams getting to that quarterfinal. No one's got to the semi-finals. But also, actually, one of the things about this World Cup, Qatar 2022, and one of the things I do have agreed with is that the World Cup probably needed to come to the Arab world at a certain point. And so to have an Arab country in the last eight, I think is very good for the tournament. And particularly this Moroccan team, I think, have been a credit. And have also shown is that you don't have to necessarily be an all-flair team. There is a different way to play. And that tournament football, a lot of the time, is about defending, doing your job, getting through. And actually Croatia, who you mentioned, are a team that show that as well. But yeah, I think if we could mention them, FIFA will be delighted that Morocco have got this far.
All right, that'll do for part two. We'll do any other business in part three. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. So look, we've got a day off tomorrow. We will do a quarterfinal preview just because they don't want me to have a day off, the bastards. So that'll come tomorrow afternoon at some point. Who's your favourite to win the whole thing, Barry?
I don't know. If you were to put a gun to my head and force me to choose, I'm going to say Brazil, but not with any confidence.
Jonathan?
There's a part of me that thinks England are going to win it. And I might look quite silly in a few days' time, basically. I feel like there's a point in every sort of top player's career where they get their stripes, or they get the kind of flowers that they deserve for their career. And I'm just wondering if Kyle Walker's going to have that on Saturday against Mbappe. I feel like he's been very underlooked like throughout his whole career, but he's so important to England. And I'm just wondering if that might see off France. And then there's just this little inkling part of me that feels like England might win it. If not, then Argentina and Messi. I'll go for it. I'll just say that.
Sir Kyle Walker. Arise, Sir Kyle. That's so exciting. Think of all the knighted Spurs right backs. Sir Kyle Walker, Serge Aurier. There are so many. John, what do you think?
I think Sir Ralph Ramsey was a Spurs right back, wasn't he? So there you go. And will there be other knights to come from England? I do think that, well, obviously that France game is crucial because they need to win it to get through, quite obviously. Yes. I have a feeling that the winner might come from that tie. I don't really trust Argentina and Brazil defensively. And it's not the dancing. And it's not the fact that Argentina are relying on a very old Messi. But The answer is, like all of us, really, if we're honest, none of us have got a clue. It's quite an open tournament, isn't it?
It's quite a fun conversation. Now, on the subject of the dancing, Bradley sent us an email. Hey, all, I wanted to first start out saying I appreciate the pods every day. Among the football podcasts available, I certainly enjoyed the variety of panels here the most. So well done to the three of you amongst other panelists. To respond to the conversation yesterday on the Brazil team enjoying a dance, I ask if anyone has watched an American football game recently. Every time they make a play on offense or defense, there are players celebrating. This past Sunday, while watching, I noticed a defender for the Bengals swat away a pass, celebrate, and then get burned on the very next play. So for footballers to celebrate goals, the thing everyone is coming to see, I say, why not? I agree with the notion that it's an unfortunate lost art to the modern game. But seriously, I'd love to listen to Roy Keane watching an American football game. I don't think he'd last 5 minutes before losing his mind.
This actually has made its way into Premier League football, I think. And it's made it, I think, via NFL, possibly basketball, and possibly rugby as well. Now, Barry watches a bit more rugby than I do, but there's a lot of celebrations, isn't there, of like winning a penalty and scrums. And actually, one of the England squad members, Connor Cody, who we don't expect to see, I was watching Everton at Fulham. And when every time Everton cleared the ball against Fulham, and he had to do a lot of clearing the ball against Fulham, Connor Cody was doing that sort of NFL-style celebrations and hoop and holler. So maybe that will come in. And I don't think Roy's going to like it. I think that's right, yeah.
Yeah, but Chiellini and Bonucci, absolute heroes for doing that, aren't they? Like, properly, like every single one. There's a good clip doing the rounds on social media of some computer game where Roy Keane like scores a goal, his computer image, and then like does the worm and does all these dances. And it does look, because it says 16 Keane, you're like, it looks absolutely hilarious. Tom says, Iliman and Dai just started the World Cup knockout stages in a brand new stadium in Qatar for Senegal. On Saturday, he's expected to play at Bramall Lane against Huddersfield. No real question, just a reminder that life comes at you pretty fast, he says. George says, what does John Bruin think of my Spotify Wrapped? Yeah, lots of people got in touch to say they'd listened to Football Weekly for an inordinate amount of minutes this year. So thank you for doing that. George's top five, he says, I'm hoping the last band mentioned in the top artist saved me a scolding. And his top five bands are Foals, Coldplay, The Cribs, The Vaccines and The Smiths.
I've seen one of them live and it isn't the one you think it is. I've seen Foles live years ago when they just started out. Not for me.
Such a music snob, aren't you?
No, just...
Can't people just enjoy that? I like Now 12, Climie Fisher, Aswad. What's not to like?
I like all those too, yeah. That's the thing. You mistake this stuff.
I do,
I absolutely love those that pop nostalgia. No, I mean, The Smiths, obviously, problematic, though. I will confess, I still listen to them now and again.
It's like watching this World Cup, basically.
There is a moral dilemma in listening to The Smiths, but I feel that I would be letting down Johnny Marr, Andy Rourke and Mike Joyce not to listen to that. And Morrissey is a pillock, we know this.
Mark says, "Oi, Max, you sent me down a rabbit hole of expensive coat hangers. As an aside, we should burn the whole system of capitalism to the ground." This is with reference to Thierry Henry's expensive coat hanger, which I believed was £500, and he was very upset that somebody lost it. It won at Sky. Maybe apocryphal, so don't sue me, Thierry. Oh, no, a couple more to finish with. Why not? Carl says, "Good morning, regular listener and attendee at the live shows in Dublin, loving the LOLO content. Listen carefully. I will say this only once. Barry might be interested to know that Hair Flick now lives in Dublin. His wife is from Galway. Any chance of the LOLO theme if France win the World Cup, or?" For the France-England preview, Carl in Dublin.
I believe Hair Flick moved into our sainted trade.
Well, this is the... You missed the whole...
And became a sub-editor.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
No, a friend of mine worked with him, yeah.
Yeah. So, no, you clearly don't listen to this pod every day, John, because there was quite the moment.
I'm sort of busy, you know.
I would argue it was the World Cup highlight.
I'd say it's the best moment of this entire series so far.
Was Hair Flick being in touch?
No. I mean, we don't need to reprise it, but basically Barry thought the policeman from Hello, Hello became a sub-editor of The Guardian, and I found it quite amusing.
Arthur Bostrom, yeah.
Of all the people on Earth to be a sub-editor, he would not be the best one, would he? For obvious reasons.
And the only thing I'd say about that is a friend of mine is a TV director on a Facebook discussion. I once put some gag in and it was liked by Arthur Bostrom, Officer Crabtree.
Well done.
And so that I was absolutely delighted with that, as I'm sure you can imagine.
That is tremendous. I believe you were on that pod as well, Jonathan, weren't you? You still don't know what we're talking about.
I was on that pod and I've not, like, at the time I'd never seen you laugh so much and I can still see the joy in your face, even to this day.
I sent you a YouTube montage of his best bits. Did you watch it?
I have to say no.
Oh, mate.
Oh, no. Right, he's a genius. Well, listen, come on.
I'll send it again.
Do you know why? Because I think whenever you tweet, you just get a barrage of replies that I couldn't trawl through.
Basically. No, I sent this on the WhatsApp group. I sent you this person. I mean, like, you know, I said, here is a YouTube 5 minutes of Officer Crabtree.
I will watch it.
There we go. I mean, like,
I'm going to go back and watch it.
Yeah, no, I'll send it again. Don't worry.
A genius.
Big Glaswegian says, have Wilson and Barney resorted to wrestling naked in front of the fire like Ollie Reed and Alan Bates in Woman in Love yet? And if so, who won? I imagine Ronne having the tenacity and brute force, but Wilson greasing him up like a piglet and being impossible to get a grip on. As yet, we don't know, but we will ask them next time they're on. And that'll do for today. Thank you very much, Barry.
Thanks.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, John.
Cheers.
Football Weekly was produced by Silas Gray. Our executive producer is Christian Bennett. We'll look ahead to the quarterfinals tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.